next weekend. We got an amazing weekend planned next weekend. You do not want to miss it. And we want you to help us spread the word about Easter at Red Chapel. In fact, would you grab your cell phone really quick? You've got to forget, I got a smartphone, iPhone, or if you're not as cool, you got a Galaxy or something like that. Would you take it out real fast? I'm just kidding. Don't get mad. I feel people throwing daggers at me right now. Would you take it out real fast? Take out your phone real fast. Go to your Facebook, your Instagram page. We've posted some promotion on our Red Chapel pages there. Would you grab it real fast? Maybe repost it, share it, let people know this is the place to be for Easter is here at Red Chapel. So we got an amazing weekend. Friday's our Good Friday service, 7 o'clock. And then Sunday, we got two services. Don't forget, we are changing our service times next week. So we have 10 and 11:15, which is really cool because if you come to the 11 o'clock service, you get to sleep in an extra 15 minutes, or you can actually be on time next week instead of showing up. You're going to show up at 11:15 thinking you're strolling in late, and you are right on time. Or you could show up 15 minutes early, and you could help us. You could volunteer. You could jump on one of our serve teams. You can help us on Sunday morning. So just pretend like it's starting at 11 next week. We're really starting at 11:15, but just pretend I didn't tell you that today. And we're starting at 11 o'clock. So just kidding. We're excited about Easter at Red Chapel. I want to jump in this morning. We're actually in our third and final week of this series we're calling The Church, where heaven and earth collide. And we've been kind of showing some of the history of the church throughout the past few thousand years, and I want to kind of jump off there again this morning. We're going to study, we're going back thousands of years right now, so just kind of go back with me. We're going back to almost the beginning of time. We're going back to the book of Exodus, which is the second book in the Bible. And let me just kind of set this up for you real fast of what's happening right now. At this point in history is the children of Israel, God's people, they've actually been in bondage, enslaved for hundreds of years. Yes, you heard that correctly. For hundreds of years, God's people have been enslaved in the country of Egypt. And a man comes on the scene. You may or may not have heard him before. He's a man by the name of Moses. And where we pick up his story is he's having this interesting conversation with a bush out in the middle of the wilderness. So check this out. In Exodus chapter 3, one day Moses, he's tending the flock of his father-in-law, Jethro. He led the flock far into the wilderness, and he came to Sinai, the mountain of God. There, the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a blazing fire from the middle of a bush. Could you imagine that? We were in, my son and I went to Phoenix the last couple of days to go to spring training, and we took a little hike yesterday morning. And if you've been to Arizona, it's like, it's just desert everywhere. And I had my little niece, Taylor, with me, and she was just like taken back. She'd never seen, she's 6 years old. She had never seen scenery like this. We were out in the middle of the desert. A hotel was out in the middle of the desert. And so we took this hike, and it was just kind of like shocking to her. And so I kind of imagine that's what's happening for Moses. He's just out in the middle of nowhere. He's out there. He's tending the flock of the sheep of his father-in-law, Jethro, and then all of a sudden, an angel of the Lord appears in this burning bush. And so Moses, he stares in amazement because the bush was engulfed in flames, but it didn't burn up. And so he says, this is amazing. Why isn't this bush burning up? I must go see it. So when the Lord sees Moses coming to take a closer look, he calls to him from the middle of the bush. Could you imagine that? I mean, you're out there. Nobody's around. It's kind of creepy. There's a bush. It's on fire, but it's not being consumed. And then all of a sudden, God himself speaks from this burning bush. And he says, Moses, Moses. Moses replies, here I am. And God says, do not come any closer. In fact, God warns him. He says, take off your sandals, for you are standing on holy ground. And I'm sharing this story with you because we're kind of talking about these moments when you experience this collision of heaven and earth. And for many of us, this is what the church has been. It's been the place, it's been the space where heaven and earth collided for that moment in time in our life. And we had something similar to this burning bush experience. And as you study history, you see there are always these places, these spaces where God interacts with man this way. Today, most commonly, this happens in the church. It happens on Sunday mornings here at Red Chapel and churches all over the world, where people come together in just ordinary spaces, ordinary places. But when God's people come together and the presence of God comes in to that place, for example, it's here at Red Chapel this morning. In that moment, those moments, we had experiences in our worship set and throughout our services. Heaven and earth are on a collision course in that moment. And you can see, we talked about the story of Jacob, where he had a very similar experience and a vision where angels are coming up and down from heaven to earth. He has his own experience of this collision between heaven and earth. And here is Moses having a very similar experience. It's this burning bush experience where heaven and earth collide and God begins to speak to Moses, and something interesting happens. And we've been studying this throughout the series. Is that whenever these types of collisions take place, they were always followed by a commission. I said this last week. These collisions are followed by a commission. Easy way for you to remember this. A collision followed by a commission. And so last week, Jacob is commissioned by God that he and his family would be a blessing to all the families of the earth. In fact, through their family, God would bless all the families of the earth. And so Jacob is given this commission that he's to bless all the families of the earth. Now watch what happens here with Moses. He has this amazing experience, and this is what God tells him. The Lord said to him, I have certainly seen the oppression of my people in Egypt. I have heard their cries of distress because of the harsh slave drivers. Remember, they've been enslaved for hundreds of years. He says, I'm aware of their suffering, so I've come down to rescue them from the power of the Egyptians and lead them out of Egypt into their own fertile and spacious land. And God tells me, he says, the cry of the people of Israel has reached me. I've seen how harshly the Egyptians abuse them. And then here's Moses' commission. He says, now I want you to go, for I am sending you to Pharaoh. You must lead my people of Israel out of Egypt. So Moses is being called to go into the darkness and depression and distress and to lead the people of God free. Now here's something you need to know, is that Egypt throughout the Bible always represents sin, it represents darkness, it represents bondage. This is what we call typology in studying the Bible. And Egypt always represents sin. It represents bondage. It represents darkness. And so God is commissioning Moses. He's just out minding his own business one day. He has this amazing experience where heaven and earth collide in this space in his life, followed by this commission that Moses, you're the one that I've chosen. I've heard the cries of the people. They're in distress. They're enslaved for hundreds of years. And now, Moses, I want you to go. I'm sending you to Pharaoh, and I want you to lead my people out of Israel or of Egypt. And so God is calling Moses to head straight into the darkness. He's calling Moses to light the way for the people of Israel out of darkness. He's calling Moses to be a light in the darkness. He's calling Moses to be a light in the world. And it's interesting because when Jesus refers to the church, we've been talking about this, he uses different phraseology. Last week we studied this, that Jesus, when he refers to the church, he said, you're going to be the salt of the earth. Like, you're going to be the flavor. You're going to have these persevering or preserving elements and properties as a part of who you are. And you're going to preserve the earth. And so now Jesus, when he refers to the church, he tells us not only are we the salt of the earth, but he says you're going to be the light of the world. And so we see very similar to the commission that Moses receives to go be a light in the darkness, to lead people out of darkness and into light. God commissions the church to do the same exact thing. He said, the church will be the light of the world. The church, the place where heaven and earth collide, is always followed by a commission. And God commissions the church now to be the light of the world. And then, fast forward with me a few thousand years, we go to the first chapter of the book of John, and we meet another bright light. In John chapter 1, John is introducing Jesus into the world. He's announcing the arrival of Jesus to the earth, right? And this is like the epitome of the crash course collision of heaven and earth. God himself coming to earth in the man Christ Jesus. And watch how John introduces him. He says, in the beginning, the Word, referring to Jesus, he already existed. The Word was with God. The Word was God. He existed in the beginning with God. In fact, God created everything through him, referring to Jesus. Nothing was created except through him. And then watch this. The Word gave life to everything that was created. And his life, now he's talking about the life of Jesus. His life brought light to everyone. This is how he refers to Jesus coming to the world. He would be this great light. In fact, he says, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness can never extinguish it. Jesus, when he comes into the world, he comes as this bright light piercing through the darkness. The darkness can never extinguish this great light that is coming into the world. He says, the one who is the true light, who is giving light to everyone, he was coming into the world. So John uses this metaphor of light to tell us the story of Jesus coming to the earth. When Jesus, the Word of God, he came into the earth, he came as light to the darkness. He was the light that would light the way, just similarly to Moses. Moses would light the way for the people of Israel out of Egypt. Jesus would come and he would light the way for people. He would ultimately lead them to the Father. And he was the light that could never be extinguished. Now, he's not just light for light's sake. He is light because he's come to extinguish the darkness. Jesus came to bring light to those who live in darkness. And so today, we no longer have to, you have to understand, everything changed when Jesus came into the world. So we're making a huge deal. We're celebrating Easter. It's like Super Bowl Sunday for the church because we are celebrating Jesus coming into the earth, into the world. He died, he buried, he rose again. He had the final say, the final victory. This was his whole purpose in coming to the world, was to extinguish the darkness. And so no longer do we have to live in darkness when we encounter the light of the world. When you encounter Jesus, it's like somebody flips the light on in your world. The lights go on. You're living in darkness. You come into a relationship with Jesus, and it's like a light is turned on. And light, you know this about light. Light always defeats the darkness. I mean, you can be in a pitch black room, and the smallest beam of light just penetrates the darkness, right? You have that option on your phone. Swipe up on the iPhone, and if you find yourself in a dark place, it's nice to have. You may not have an old school flashlight, but we have it, and you just flip that thing up. You put that light, and all of a sudden, it may not seem like a huge deal, but that little light, when it's extremely dark, all of a sudden, it becomes a big deal, and it lights. And this is what John is saying. Jesus is coming to the world. He comes. The world is full of darkness. Sin has ravaged our world. It's put our world in utter despair and distress and darkness, very similar to what the children of Israel were living with for generations in bondage. And here comes Jesus into the world, and his light pierces the darkness. And that's what it's like when you experience Jesus for the first time. It's like there's a light flipped on in your life, and everything changes. Darkness has to flee when the light is turned on. Not only do we see what's really around us, but we see the way we should go, and we see the way for others around us as well. So light always defeats the darkness. And not only does it defeat the darkness in our light, but when we've experienced the light of Christ, our lives are changed and our purpose in life is changed. When you receive the light of Jesus in your life, it's not only to light up your world, but it's so that you'll shine that same light and reflect it back into the dark world around you. Peter, when he's writing to the early church in the New Testament, he talks to them about this light that they've encountered. He brings to bear a very important point about the light. He says, but you are not like that, for you are a chosen people, you're a royal priest, a holy nation, God's very own possession. Watch this. He says, as a result, you can show others the goodness of God. For he's called you out of darkness and into his marvelous light. So God calls us out of darkness into his light. And as a result, now he says it's our responsibility to reflect that light back into the world around us. As a result, we're to show others the goodness of God. This is so important because as Christians, those of us that have encountered Jesus, we've encountered the light. We know that this light that pierces the darkness, the light that brings healing to our soul, the light that mends the brokenness, the light that spreads truth to abolish lies, the light that appears to help us in time of need, the light that guides us through difficult situations. It helps us. It gives us wisdom. It gives us discernment. This is what the light of the world, when it penetrates our life, this is what we receive with the light of the world. But not only does it do that, it's also to be a reflection back into the world around us. So as a result, Peter says, you can show the goodness of God. And so light, God lights up our world so that we can light the world around us. Our response is to rescue. Our response to the light being shown in our life. Ain't you thankful that you've received the light of Jesus? That Jesus reached down into your darkness. He wasn't afraid of your darkness. Light don't run from darkness. Light always penetrates the darkness. And one day Jesus appeared in your dark world. He brought the light of life into your world. He lit up your world for the purpose of you lighting up the world around you. We see this. One of the stories that we see this just so beautifully is it's also found in the book of John, John chapter 4. It's probably one of my favorite stories in all of Scripture, especially during Jesus' time here on earth. And Jesus, I told you last week, everywhere Jesus went, multitudes of people would flock to Jesus. And Jesus would minister. Jesus is healing people. He's teaching people day in and day out, hours upon hours. Jesus is spending time with people, and he's lighting up the world around him. Jesus was also human. And so at times, he would have his energy zapped from him. And there were moments during his ministry when he would just kind of pull away. He would find him a place of seclusion with just him and his closest disciples. And it's at this point in time, one of the very similar time, Jesus is exhausted. He's retreated. He's going to re-energize. He's going to refresh himself. And so him and his disciples kind of go away. His disciples leave him at a particular place. They go to find some food to refresh themselves. And while Jesus is there, he finds himself at a well. And a well was an important place in the middle of these communities. A well was, it was like the social place for social gatherings would happen in the middle of a city. It was also obvious a place where people would, they would get water. And so early in the morning, oftentimes women would come and they would come to the well and they would gather water for their families or whatever, if they were planting a garden, whatever they needed, the nutrients from that water. They would come early in the morning, they would socialize for a little while, they'd take their water back to their home, and they'd continue throughout the day. Well, at this particular point, it's the middle of the day, and Jesus is at the well when a woman approaches Jesus. And it's important to note, this is in the middle of the day when this woman approaches Jesus, because most women would come early in the morning to the well. But this day, at this particular time, it's the middle of the day, and this woman comes to the well. And later in the story, we find out why she comes in the middle of the day, because this woman is considered an outcast of society at this point. This woman has been married 5 different times, and she's currently living with a man that's not even her husband, the 6th guy. I mean, she had issues, man. And I guess she just couldn't hold a man down. And so she's on number 6. She's out. I kind of imagine that, you know, people probably consider her like the home wrecker right? She's probably had multiple affairs, been married multiple times. She's the outcast of society, and so she doesn't come when everybody else comes to the well. Even though it's the middle of the day, this woman is living in severe darkness. I just imagine that she's probably living in the shadows of guilt and shame. She doesn't want to be where everybody else is. She doesn't want people talking about her. She's living in the shadows of guilt and shame. And it just so happens that at that exact moment, Jesus happens to be at the well. And so as she approaches the well, Jesus asks her if she would get him something to drink. And this conversation ensues. And she's wondering why Jesus would ask her to do this, why he's even talking to her. And so Jesus looks at her in the middle of the conversation. He said, you know, if you knew who I was, you would actually ask me for something to drink. And now she's really perplexed because Jesus is there. He doesn't have a rope and a bucket to pull any water out of the well. And so she says that to Jesus, and Jesus begins to tell her that the water that he's referring to is not natural water. He said, what I have to offer you is living water. In fact, Jesus said, if you were to take a drink of this water that I'm offering you today, you would never thirst again. This woman is thirsty, if you know what I mean. This girl's thirsty. And Jesus says, if you're to drink of this water, you will never thirst again. And she starts to get a little excited. She starts to get a little hopeful, and she begins to tell Jesus, I know what you're talking about. I've heard the stories. I've heard that the Messiah is coming, and the one that's coming, he's going to be able to give people what you're talking about. And Jesus interrupts her, and he said, I am the Messiah. I'm the one that you're talking about. And then Jesus, as if to prove to her that he's the Messiah, Jesus just begins to read her mail, man. He begins to tell her, I know who you are. I know all about you. I know that you've been married 5 times. I know the man that you're living with isn't even your husband. Jesus begins to tell all of a sudden the light, because remember, light brings truth to the darkness. Here she is living in the shadows of guilt and shame, and like we all do, right? Everybody wants to live a pretend life. Nobody wants people to know the real you. Here she is. She's exposed. Jesus knows every. She can't hide. She can't post her picture on Instagram and edit the filters and then hashtag no filter so everybody sees who the fake person. No, she can't. Jesus, this is what truth does. Truth exposes the lies. And here she is, completely transparent before Jesus. And you would think in this moment she would be embarrassed because people see who she really is. You'd think she'd be full of insecurity. And yet as she stands there before Jesus, completely exposed, completely transparent, she's known. She's never been known like this before. She can't hide any longer in the shadows. The light comes in and it penetrates the darkness. This is what light does for us. And instead of being embarrassed, you can sense like the weight finally comes off of her shoulders. Because that's what it's like living in darkness. Trying to live a life of pretend. It weights you down. And here's Jesus. He exposes the truth about who she is. And instead of being embarrassed, there's like this huge weight that comes off of her because somebody sees her for who she is. And Jesus doesn't reject her. He accepts her. Jesus is not intimidated by her past because light doesn't run from darkness. Light, Jesus was the light that was coming to penetrate the darkness, to extinguish the darkness. This is what I love about the encounters that we have with Jesus. Jesus doesn't come to expose who we really are, to fill us with more shame or more guilt. He comes to relieve us from the weight of living as if somebody who we really aren't. And so here she stands, completely transparent before Jesus, and yet Jesus accepts her. Jesus doesn't run from her. Jesus is not intimidated by her past. In fact, he would teach this lesson to his disciples. Just a few verses later, the disciples come back and they see Jesus talking to this woman that's an outcast, this woman that should be embarrassed, this woman that has brought all this embarrassment to her family. And this is the question they pose to Jesus. They say to Jesus, "Why are you talking to her? Why would you have anything to do with her?" And Jesus begins to explain to them in no uncertain terms that light doesn't run from darkness. I want to tell you this morning, Red Chapel, this is one of the lessons that Jesus would have us to learn this morning. Many of us, we stay away from the people that may be considered the outcast, the people that society doesn't want to accept, or maybe people come into our church and they've got a record. They've done things in their life that maybe they're ashamed of, and they come in and they're weighted down with shame and guilt. This is not the place for them to leave here weighted down anymore. This is a place for them to come and to experience the light that will extinguish the darkness in their life. We don't run from darkness. We're not intimidated by darkness. Red Chapel will always be a place where people who come from different paths, different backgrounds, different issues, different situations in their life, this is a place where they come to find light and hope and life in their life. So Jesus is teaching his disciples this. So light doesn't run from darkness. It doesn't turn away. God doesn't look at our lives and be like, "Oh my God, I don't want anything to do with that." Christians are guilty of this sometimes. We categorize people. We categorize people's sins. And certain people, we're like, it's like they're contagious. Like their sin's going to rub off on us. Like they've done something. It's going to contaminate our lives. Light does not run from darkness. We don't have to be intimidated by people. We don't have to be insecure or intimidated by the issues that they come into this church with. This is a place where they can experience the light of the world that will extinguish the darkness in their life. So here is this woman, completely exposed, and she has this life-altering experience with Jesus. Jesus accepts her. Jesus allows her to drink from this living water, and she has this moment where heaven and earth collide. This is her space. This is her moment. This is her time in life when heaven and earth collide. They're on this collision course for this exact moment in history when she would encounter Jesus for the first time. And once again, as it always happens, this collision always leads to a commission. It wasn't just so that she could experience the light of Jesus, so that her life could be illuminated, so that she would have direction. She would no longer live under the weight of the darkness in her world. Jesus lit up her life and then gives her a commission. Here's how we know this, because immediately, watch what she does. In verse 28, the woman left her water jar beside the well. She ran back to the village, telling everyone, "Come and see a man who told me everything I ever did. Could he possibly be the Messiah?" And then watch what happens. The people come streaming from the village to see Jesus. Her collision was immediately followed by a commission. Just like Moses, he experiences God in this amazing supernatural way with the burning bush. "Now, Moses, I want you to go to Egypt, and I want you to lead my people out of darkness." And here is this woman. She experiences Jesus in this supernatural way, this collision between heaven and earth. And immediately, what does she do? She accepts this commission. She runs out, and she begins to tell people about Jesus. And droves of people come to Jesus that day because she chose to respond by rescuing other people. This is the point. This is the point of this collision. This is the point. Every Sunday morning, people are experiencing Jesus. They're being refreshed. We taste of the living water. It inspires us. It reinvigorates us to go back out into the dark world and to tell people about Jesus. to shed the light of Jesus into a dark world. Every one of us is surrounded every single week by people that live in darkness. There are people that you work with, people you're sitting in a classroom with, people you may be at a family reunion with. Wherever you find yourself, we're constantly surrounded by people who are living in darkness. And Jesus lit up our world so that we would charge into the darkness, that we would pierce the darkness, that we would extinguish the dark. We have a responsibility. Jesus didn't just light up our world so that everything would be great for us, so that our way would be illuminated, and our life and our families would be blessed. Jesus didn't just light up our world. He changed our purpose. And our purpose now is that we're to show the wonderful works of God into a dark, bleak world. It's amazing what just one little light can do. For hundreds of years, for generation after generation, God's people live under the bondage of the Egyptians. And then they begin to cry out to God. Scripture we read earlier, God says, I've heard the cries of my people. I've heard their distress. I've looked down and I've seen how they're being abused and how they're being treated. I've heard their cries. Can I tell you something this morning? While we sit here at Red Chapel enjoying the blessings of God, there are people in our world that are crying out to God today. God doesn't tune a deaf ear. Jesus is listening to the cries of the world. He's listening to people that are desperate. He's listening to the cries of people that right now in this moment find themselves in distress. People that surround us every day. People that are living in brokenness. And people that don't have the ability to get themselves out of the situation that they're in. The children of Israel did not have the power in and of themselves to free themselves. If they did, they would have done it a lot sooner. They wouldn't have stayed in this position for hundreds and hundreds of years. They are living in darkness. Darkness has a way of manipulating, playing tricks on your mind. Right? Darkness has a way of speaking to you that you don't deserve the light. You're not worthy of the light. It manipulates you. It keeps you bound in fear and guilt and shame. And this is what the children of Israel thousands of years ago, they're experiencing. But they begin to cry out to God, the same cries that go out today. And God listens to their cry. Can I tell you this morning that God hears the cries of people today that are crying out in distress, and he has the answer to the problem. He tells Moses, Moses, I'm calling you. You're going to be the one that lights up their world. You're going to lead them out of darkness. And he issues the same commission to us today, Red Chapel. He's heard the cries of people. And he issues a commission today to all of us. I lit up your world so that you would go back out into a dark world and you would lead people to the light that brings life into their world. We have a commission. We have a responsibility this morning to be the light of the world. And you know the story. One man, Moses. Moses, he begins to give God all kinds of excuses like we do. You ever been tempted to share your faith with somebody, to shine light into somebody's world, and you start thinking of all the excuses why you can't do that, right? Like, I'm not gonna, you know what I'm saying, Pastor Donnie? I don't have all the right words to say. You know, I haven't memorized the Bible. I don't know how to say it. I'm not sure, you know. And so Moses, believe it or not, he gave God the same excuses. He tells God, God, I can't speak. I stutter. Moses stuttered. Imagine going to the Pharaoh, which in our day would be like the president of the United States. God ushering you in to the White House to tell the Pharaoh to let my people go, and you can't even talk. Moses is intimidated. He's insecure, but light is not intimidated by darkness. And so Moses and God have this conversation. God says, don't worry, I'm going to speak through you. And Moses says, still not going to work. So God says, all right, I'll send your brother Aaron with you. And one man, just one man, to an entire nation that's been living in darkness for hundreds of years. They've been enslaved for hundreds of years. Imagine the mentality of these people. They're broken. They're distraught. They just succumbed to the darkness. Maybe you're here this morning and you find yourself in that place where you just lost hope. You've lost reason to live. You've lost purpose. And you just succumbed to the darkness. Some of you may come from families like this. It may have been generations, generational curses that have been passed down to people where you've just accepted the darkness. But God sends Moses one man, one little light. But that's all it took. Just one person that was willing to go to the Pharaoh of Egypt and demand that he let God's people go. I believe we have the power, the light that is lit up in our world, to walk into the darkness and to demand that people be set free. We have the power in our faith and sharing our faith to see people liberated from darkness, to see people who are hopeless and devastated and broken be brought back to life by the light of the world. And so you know the story. Through a series of 10 different plagues, finally, here comes Moses, just one man, one light, and he leads an entire nation of people out of darkness. I remember when I was growing up, I grew up in church, and my parents, they forced me to go to church when I was a kid. And I remember going to Sunday school, and they would teach us biblical principles through different ways, and one was through song. And I remember being taught as a child that I had this power in my life, even as a young person, that there was power in my life to light up the world. And they sang this song. You may have heard it. It was called, "This Little Light of Mine, I'm Gonna Let It Shine." You ever heard that song? "This Little Light." And you'd hold your finger up because that was your light. That's why I just kind of picture Moses. He just has one light. We sing, "This Little Light of Mine, I'm Gonna Let It Shine. This Little Light of Mine." And they were teaching us at a young age that we had the ability to pierce the darkness of just one light. Just one young person, some of my earliest memories, probably 5, 6 years old, singing that song and just believing that I had the ability to light up the world around me, to extinguish the darkness around me. They had a verse. The verse said, "This little light of mine, I won't let it shine." The verse said, "Hide it under a bushel." No. Throw our hands up. "I'm gonna let it shine." I wish we had that kind of tenacity today, that we're not gonna hide our light, that we're not gonna go into the workforce, we're not gonna go onto our campus and just hide the light that God has given us, but we're gonna expose, we're gonna let it shine, we're gonna be the light of the world. The verse said, "Don't let Satan it out." You heard that one? "I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine." That's what I'm challenging you to do today, Red Chapel, to let your light shine in the world. This is what we're called to be. We are called to be the light of the world. And God forbid that we cover up our light and stop people from receiving the light of the world. I want you to stand with me this morning. I believe that God puts us in places and spaces in our life to bring the light of the world, to extinguish the darkness. In fact, I believe if you're aware, if you're alert, that every day God gives us opportunities with people to bring them the light. What if we live with this keen sense of awareness that God has called us into the world to light up the darkness? I wonder what opportunities, if you're alert, if you're keenly aware, I wonder what opportunities, even this week, that would present themselves, that opportunity for you to share your testimony, for you to share that moment when heaven and earth collided in your life and how God radically changed your world and you experienced Jesus. Think back to that day when you experienced Jesus for the first time and the darkness vanished and your world was full of life and full of light. Think back to that moment where God brought you from the miracles that God's done in your life. They weren't just so that you would consume them on yourself. Jesus did that so that you could expose and extinguish the darkness of the world around you. He calls us to extinguish darkness, to pierce darkness.